So I was talking about this with Adam, and he was telling me how there was another interview apparently with Puffy, and how he was talking about he used the ideas and the imagery from Outkast to market Biggie, like all the Kangos and all that. He got that from Outkast.
Appreciate you guys subscribing, watching the whole nine. If you appreciate this video, head over to Patreon, you know, and become a supporter. We appreciate it. Make sure you follow us on all the socials. Head over to the site, cop some merch, all the other good stuff. And we're just gonna jump right into it, man. I'm here with B, FIFO, Mike. Look, the Organized Noise documentary went up on Netflix, and I didn't even, to be honest, I didn't even know this thing was coming out until people started talking about it on Twitter. And asking us if we were gonna talk about it. And I was watching it, and when I tell you that thing took me down memory lane, man, like it was crazy. Like the backstory, I really didn't know the backstory like that. But yo, when they got the Outkast and like the story of Outkast and how L.A. Reid didn't believe in them, and then Players Ball was a Christmas song and all. Man,
yeah, I was a little confused. I was a little confused with that one though, because like while they say Players Ball was the first song, when you look at the Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music, it says the original Players Ball. So which one came first exactly?
You said like Reprise, and then you said the original one.
I
don't know.
Because I was confused because it made it seem like the Christmas song was.
I think the Christmas song was the first.
So that's why I was wondering why it said original on the.
And they had to pop off that song.
Right.
But the I think the interesting thing was just the dynamic of the group, like Sleepy Brown, and how they all feel like this boy. That made them who they are, and we all know, like, man, they set the South on fire. The Players Ball, Southern Cadillac Music, the fucking Goody Mob shit, and how Rico put all them shits together and put them in, and fucking CeeLo talking about his shit.
I think what was also interesting to me was I didn't know the other songs and people that they produced for.
Yeah. You're talking about Waterfalls and
Waterfalls.
I had no idea.
You knew Waterfalls.
No, I knew. I didn't know
I didn't know they produced it.
I didn't know
because because normally Dallas Austin kind of handled most of TLC's
production. But that's what he was saying in the documentary.
I knew that.
You knew that?
Yeah.
I did not.
Yeah, I thought that was coming out.
Like, or that inbox song.
No, I didn't know that. Like, you know what I'm saying? And
but the story on how they put that shit together.
The story. Yeah, that was crazy.
It was nuts.
And even the In Vogue song, because when Buddy started playing the piano, I'm like, I know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
I didn't know they did it. You know what I'm saying? Because you also got to remember, like, back in 94, in the early 90s, like 94 when Southern Player Cadillac, their Outkast first album came out.
Southern Playlist of Cadillac, what do you mean?
You were in like third grade.
I was in fourth grade.
See? So I was fucking senior, dog. That's why. Yeah.
What do you mean? College?
Hey, Rob asked me, like, who was you a senior in? Like, who was you in college? That's what
you were talking about. Fucking high school, dog.
Yeah, so in 94, bro, like, you know, I'm too young. Yeah. So I knew, you know, I heard almost all of this music and stuff like that, but I was too young to acknowledge it. You know, I'm listening to the radio and stuff like that.
Were you in Miami or Chicago at the time?
94, I was in Chicago.
But when I was watching it and I'm trying to, you know, recall like that. Because I remember me and my brother used to sit there, man. We would put that shit on the stereo system and we would play that shit from front to back over and over and over again.
But see, I wanted to challenge you on something, though, real quick. Because, like, and I don't want you to forget what you're going to say.
Okay.
Because it was something that you said that they set the South on fire. So, y'all was bumping Outkast like that in Mississippi?
Yeah.
It wasn't like that in Florida. I don't remember it being like that because I remember.
Florida's not the South.
I know it's different. But I feel you. But I still feel like it is the South, though.
Here's kind of what I mean by that. It kind of goes back to the documentary. And fucking, I don't even think I even knew Puffy directed the first fucking video.
I didn't
I had no idea.
I'm a hippie to something Adam told me, but y'all go ahead about that video.
But just how Rico was like, yo, you need to put this jersey on. It needs to say Atlanta.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, that's so crazy. So that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, Rico was very like,
oh yeah, he was like the
right. He was like, it has to be this, and from there it kind of took off. So he got maybe not on fire, but on the map, because that was kind of their thing. Yeah. They always battle with that.
Because my thing was, I remember watching that video. I remember being at home and watching the video, and I remember like listening to Outkast in my house. I never took it outside the house, because nobody was bumping it. So I would play it in my room all the time. And it was one day, I was in school, and I heard somebody say, I was like, oh man, you listen to that shit too? Or whatever. And you would think, because they are from the South, that, you know, people will be listening to it, but in the hood, it's like a totally different thing. Like, we're very specific to our thing, you know what I mean? It really don't listen to stuff outside of that. But so it wasn't really on fire like that in Florida when it first came out. Only a select few. Goody Mob too. I heard somebody quote Cell Therapy. I was like, oh shit, I listened to that too. It was crazy. So that's why I was wondering when you said he set the South on fire. I don't think it. But then you say that Florida's not really South like that.
Florida's definitely not the South. Yeah, not Florida really. Is South geographically.
Yeah,
but I don't want to say culturally, but like socially, it's like Florida is its own monster.
It is, man.
So
it really is.
I think it was like here, Alabama, Houston, Mississippi, wherever else.
But see, I was on the panhandle though, so you know, I'm from Pensacola, so you would think that. Well, I guess that's why I kind of touched us a little bit.
Realize, like in Mississippi, like there are really only two places we're probably gonna go. Mm-hmm. We're gonna go to New Orleans, and we're gonna go to fucking Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
And that was the thing that Outkast, like putting Atlanta on the map, like, you know, at that age, you just driving and just going up. Yeah.
That was my thing. That makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going to Detroit, I was like, man, these dudes are really putting like Atlanta on the map. And as I'm watching this, I'm like, you know, like, are they like the first like a production or just a producers in general to like really incorporate live instrumentation? Because you know, in this time, this is like 93, 94. Mm-hmm. So you know, you got, you know, Pete Rock, DJ Premier, Easy Mo B, Dr. Dre.
I was gonna say Dre. Dre was doing the same thing, but it didn't sound like
difference. And I'm just like, man.
And back then, I think that hip hop definitely had cultural sounds, and Organized Noise was the ones to really cultivate. I don't even want to say a Southern sound. They cultivated the Atlanta sound. They put Atlanta on the map. And for me, I'm going to go from a little slightly different perspective. Obviously, I was way younger. And then when I was in high school, had a couple of homies try to put me on to Outkast. And I was kind of
But by that time, they sounded different, though.
Yeah. But he was trying to put me on the early stuff.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I was like, you know, I was in the trick. That, you know, I was into the Florida stuff at the time. When I got older, and especially now that I live here, it gives me a different feeling when I listen to Atlanta artists and I'm driving down these streets. Yeah. Atlanta is culturally completely different. I've lived in Chicago, which is obviously a culturally diverse, humongous city. Yeah. Miami, which is culturally diverse, but it's completely different.
Different animal. Different.
Atlanta is very artistic and creative. You know what I'm saying? And they were able to really, really dig in and bring that and put that on the map through the live instrumentation. Like when they had Andre, I can't remember the song, but when they were talking about Headland and DeLow.
Yeah.
I didn't know what the hell that was. Just listening to all of the spots that they were naming. You know what I'm saying? I had no connection to them before now. Yeah. That's like, holy crap. Like, I know.
It makes sense. When Andre was like, you know, I look up at the sand, me and my homies rode the Marta. And I'm like, when I moved out here, I'm like, what the hell? Hey, Marta. Oh, hey, that's what I was rapping about. So, like, yeah, it's just cool when I, like, to make that connection. I was like, I hear him. I'm rapping it all the time in Detroit. He rode the Marta through the hood.
Hit the 85, like, I thrown the head into Decatur.
Now I'm hearing it, I'm like, man, these dudes are really Atlanta. But like, Organized Noise, just as a general, I love the fact, I remember I used to always hear dungeon, you're gonna go out to the dungeon. That looked like a real dungeon. I'm talking about dirt floors.
Right.
The crib was brick.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, but when you go in the dungeon,
that's crazy. And you know what it made me think of? When we went to Detroit with you and we went in the basement of your
homeboys. And I told
you,
I was like, this is how it looked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
it was worse than that. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, man. I mean, and they were saying they were sleeping on the floor or something. Like,
unwashed sleeping bag.
And I think me and Ken had this conversation before. It was like, stuff like that, you know, you don't see the people, artists coming from like the bottom or like the grind. Like, you know what I mean? Like you don't see guys so quick now, and I guess because of the internet age, they just want to get that quick internet fame real quick, where it's like you watch Organized Noise from the time they assembled together to like just the real grind, man. What?
You know what? I'm gonna stop you real quick. That was the only gripe I had with this documentary. Mm-hmm. Remember when we had that Hobson conversation? Mm-hmm. I was telling you, unless I have a real strong connection to the crew, mm-hmm. I don't want to hear any of the backstory. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear any of the drama. I don't hear none of that shit. I just want to hear about the music. My only gripe with this is when I clicked play, what I wanted to see with these dudes making beats. I wanted to see like what made you come up with this sound.
That's
because
true.
It wasn't, I mean, not this, no disrespect, but it wasn't the people themselves that were so interesting that was like, oh, these are the people. Mm-hmm. It was the music that they made, the art that they made, these beats.
The landscape that created.
That's what made Atlanta. So I wanted to see like what made them create this sound, because that sound was, when I moved here, I did not want to move to Georgia. And this was at a time where I didn't like hip hop. Outkast was the only Southern group that I liked, because they didn't rhyme like what I was used to. They didn't rhyme like what I thought of when it came to the South. And that was because, like Andre said in this video, he was really fucking with up north shit. Mm-hmm. And then you had guys who had a completely different sound than anything.
Anybody.
That's what made Outkast so unique. So I was a bit disappointed, because I really wanted to see like them sit down and say, because I have a feeling that if you walked up to these dudes and you said, yo, have a seat and tell me what made you create the beat for Players Ball, you could have a whole documentary right there. Because I guarantee they're gonna be like, well, this record, you ain't never heard this guy, Billy Blue Note from 1979. Yeah. This is where I got the bass sound from. I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And we didn't really get that. It was more like we just got like the, it was almost like it just jumped too quick. It was like, okay, yeah, we met, and then we got into this basement, we started creating beats.
Yeah, because the moment by Waterfalls was cool when he was breaking down.
Exactly. Yeah. I wanted to see more of that, because I knew about the Waterfalls thing. I didn't know the En Vogue, and I still don't really know the En Vogue. I don't really listen to En Vogue. But I knew the Waterfalls shit, so when they were talking about that, I was like, God, that's crazy. Yeah, that's so interesting.
Yeah, you wanted more of that.
With the guitar and stuff, like when he had the live guitar guy just playing that sound, it was like,
he was like, yeah, how does this sound?
How does it sound?
That's it's like, oh man, like I want to hear more of that.
I thought it was interesting that the dude that came up with the don't go chasing, he said that was working at the Marriott.
I caught that shit.
With that voice?
Yeah.
Well,
you can get paid for that?
Yeah. Because Rico was like,
but they
all get paid for that song. Yeah. That's what I took.
But the money's being split so many ways. Yeah. Yeah. He might not be getting that much. That's true.
It depends on what kind of deal he's.
I mean, if you know, if TLC get played out of it, you know.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah,
right.
TLC got played out of it, and that was another thing that I took. And I know I'm jumping, but just the lessons that they learned from the music industry. You know what I'm saying? Just personally. So I like the fact that they touched on them individually as well. They didn't just like focus just on organized noise. They focused on them individually, and what kind of was everybody's downfall that caused the downfall of them, you know what I'm saying, somewhat.
I still didn't even really, I didn't really get what was the actual downfall. It just seemed like it was just the,
they were just saying the money, they said the money is like
Interscope. They went to Interscope, and Interscope
which
didn't
is money.
Connect with them. Yeah. But they got they got the money, but they couldn't make those hits.
So right. I was talking about this with Adam, and he was telling me how there was another interview, apparently, with Puffy, and how he was talking about, he used the ideas and the imagery from Outkast to market Biggie. Like all the Kangos and all that. Wow. He got that from Outkast. I didn't know that. So what's crazy about that to me, I mean, it's already crazy, but what's really crazy about that to me is you had the South that was kind of like just left out here to dangle. Right. Then you had the East and the West, of course.
Right.
So the quintessential person that represented New York hip hop, that style was directly influenced by the South. And that blew my fucking mind. I was like, really? That's crazy.
And you also gotta think at this time too, like during that time, this New York was like, they looked down upon like as
exactly.
Far as, like,
the South didn't even exist.
Right. Anymore. Because and for them to look down at him, and then like you just said, I didn't even know that. Like for him to take that style and put it on one of the biggest artists at the time in New York, the king of New York. Right. And, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, you think about it. Yeah, he didn't really look like a New York guy.
Yeah, I mean, now, as he said, that
more pimplicious.
Yeah,
and then when you really think about it, how Southern much more was influenced by Outkast?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, maybe Biggie's whole persona, not just the Kangos, maybe the whole persona was
because it was about a pool.
Yep.
It was like he gave you that whole idea of being in the South.
You saw Juicy like that in New York? Like, that's not New York.
That shit blew my mind. Literally, I was like, what? And then when I was driving here, I was really thinking about it. I'm like, all of the partying, the way that they, like, back in the day, a New York party was a bunch of dudes in Tim's smoking weed.
Out in the street or something.
Out the street, right. But Biggie and Puffy's version of partying was really the South kind of partying, which is a whole bunch of half-naked chicks. You know what I'm saying?
Water, by the pool.
Alcohol.
Booty shaking.
Exactly. Yeah. That was the South. That wasn't New York.
Yeah.
So all of that shit, when I was driving over here, I was like, God damn, that is fucking crazy.
And I think it was interesting what he said in the documentary. He was like, I wasn't trying to change nothing.
Yeah.
I was trying to capture Atlanta. Exactly what Atlanta is.
B mentioned something, and you know, he was like, it's funny how nobody's calling organized noise today. For beats and production.
How about this in the day four?
Yeah, I think
they're about to check back up and start. Because
they said it came back around.
Right, it's back around. But up to this point, they were not getting anywhere.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, like, a lot of people, you know, and of course, like, hip-hop fans were like, oh, man, we need another Outkast album, you know, organized. Like, everyone's begging for, like, that sound, but, like, no one is hitting them up for, like, production or, like, one, or, you know, not saying to copycat the sound from 94, 96 when they was making them out, but still, like, the fact that they changed, the way they changed the sound up, you would think, of course, and you can see them keep innovating and getting creative, why would you not want production from organized noise?
Maybe that, like, sound isn't hot right now. Like, I can't hear those
the sounds
songs,
go
like,
through waves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everything's so trendy now.
Yeah.
Like, maybe people don't want that. You hear the beats that come out now, they're very electro, you know, very EDM. Maybe they don't want those real soulful.
It's like everything has to evolve. Like you're 100% right. They can't come in 2016 with 94 beats. Like, but I think that you can take what made that special, right? Because it was them three, and just having that feel, and then working with newer artists, with newer producers. I think they can recreate something special. Now, is it gonna set Atlanta on the map? Of course not, because Atlanta's already there and everybody's jocking the South for everything. But that does not mean that there aren't artists like Rory that they mentioned in the documentary, like a Crit, like even some other people from the West, like just everybody. I think that they can still work, you know what I'm saying? And then think about how many producers were influenced by these guys. Like, they had Justice League on them, you know what I'm saying, on there. And I didn't think that they would be influenced by organized noise like that, you know what I'm saying?
Man, it sounded like Rico was hurt about Outkast, though.
I didn't know that.
I thought he was going to cry, though.
That was kind of, that was. Like, you would think about them winning that Grammy, even though they didn't have nothing to do with that album.
Yeah.
But come on. Like, he was feeding them and everything back in the day.
50-50. He said, whenever you write the hook, we produced everything. I could have took 75% of your publisher. He said, F that. He said, 50-50. That, yo, like, and you know, that's the epitome of the South, though. Like, that's that Southern hospitality. That, you, like, me moving here, like y'all motherfuckers, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not a friendly motherfucker, and I got, like, four other guys that I can call, like, yo, I need something, you know what I'm saying? I know y'all got me. That whole thing, man, like, it just put in perspective, like, Atlanta. Like, it gave me new perspective on Atlanta again, you know what I'm saying? Now that I'm here and I'm able to kind of be in that environment, man, like, and just be around AT aliens.
I think they should just turn that to like a museum.
Like,
or something.
I agree.
Like,
like kind of like a legit studio.
Because it's dope that the writing is still on the fucking wall.
Like, how cool would that be if you had that house that you go in and your basement has?
Hopefully, it's like a hip hop dude that has the house. Hopefully, it's not like an old lady.
Yeah.
It is. I thought he said it was a lady that he said, Mr. Such and Such lives here now.
Miss Wright.
or something like that.
Right. I thought it was, oh, I maybe so.
Yeah, it was a lady. It's a lady that lives there.
Oh, well, that was cool to let him in there, but
yeah.
But yeah, I would. I've obviously never been there.
So I would buy it back. Why won't you just buy it back? Like, give her another house or something.
I thought it was cool too. When they went back and they when they had the MTV MTV came with Fat Freddy.
Yeah.
And I think that was dope to put that into the.
See how young they look.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, I was walking through there with no shirt on. I'm like, where is he?
Like, oh, that's him?
Yep. I never saw their faces until the documentary.
Right. You didn't, I mean,
if these
later,
dudes walked by me, I wouldn't know them because I didn't, you know, I didn't care.
You just always saw that name.
I saw the name.
You always saw organized
I saw the name.
Yeah, but anyway, man, it was cool, man. It, like I said, it was just took me just back.
Memory lane.
Yeah, memory lane. I didn't think it would have that type of, I didn't think that emotionally I was like, oh, fuck, man, I remember all that shit.
It's just cool watching this and being like, man, like, that's where these dudes came up, like literally from the fucking dirt. I just wish we got more of that part of them coming up from the dirt.
Yeah.
Cause that was my favorite part of the whole fucking documentary was watching them talk about going into the dungeon and talking about, oh yeah, big boys sit right there and write rhymes. And here's where we made the beast right here. And you meet the spider webs and shit. And I'm like, man, that's
cool.
That's the way hip hop was, and I feel like that's the way it should be.
Yeah,
back in the day, that's the way it was here, that's the way it was in New York, that's the way it was in Cali. There was no fancy-ass studios. You were in some fucking shitty-ass hole in the wall.
You made whatever you had. If you had a broke-down turntable and a damn sample that only gave you about 30 seconds to sample something, you still was making creative beats and doing whatever you had to do, man. Like,
that's what people today do not get. They're missing. Because you can, anybody can get a laptop and make a beat. Back then, you had to really put in work.
Yeah.
And again, I hate to keep harping on it, but that's what I wish they would have drove home. Like, drive home that you motherfuckers that think everything is so fucking easy. Like, this is what we were fucking doing.
Right.
We had to learn this shit ourselves. We didn't have to, couldn't go to, there were no music schools.
But you also saw, like, what the work was. So, to me, they didn't necessarily speak it. I saw it. So,
because you know it.
But they did bring the artists in that was playing the instruments and stuff. They did do that.
Yeah, man.
But I get what you're saying, like the actual
dungeon and all the motherfuckers around there and just hanging out and you writing and you're going for this dream. Like, think about this. Like, when they heard the song on the radio,
you would have had to reenact that because they didn't have
working, dog.
Yeah, that was.
Like, they walked through.
That's not like you shit people do.
Players ball. It was like,
yep, they were out.
But you gotta imagine though, you hear your shit on the radio.
That was huge.
You thinking like, oh yeah,
big.
I made it.
Yeah, that was
I
made big. It wasn't like.
And then you're a kid on top of that. It's like, yeah, oh shit.
Like these dudes, 19, 20, you know, years old, that young, dude. Like, yeah.
And even before that, Andre quit school.
Oh yeah, he quit.
He was like, no, F that. We're gonna be out here making we're gonna be writing these rhymes. And I thought it was also interesting, Big Boy, how he still had to go to school and he graduated 3.68.
I did not know that either.
I didn't know that. So that shows dedication.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that you can do what you have to do in terms of responsibilities and still chase your dream.
Yeah.
And still pursue that. Like, both of them are not always separate, and not everybody always has that decision to make. Because Dre had it, Big Boy didn't, but he still made it work.
It's good that they're gonna get back together and do some stuff, as they said at the end. We'll see if that happens. The other one small criticism, I think they could have done more, talked about Goody Mob a little bit more. I think they glossed over that.
What's his name? Kojo. Why was he not there?
Yeah, he sure wasn't.
He wasn't all there.
I think they glossed over that story a little bit. Cause
they need a Dungeon Family documentary. That's what they need.
Yeah.
That would be hot.
Yeah.
Like, talk about that whole time.
That whole crew that really go from the start to the finish. Like, why they create that sound. How they got together and like,
All right, man, that's it. That's what we thought about the Organized Noise documentary. Let us know what you thought about it, or
check it out on Netflix.
Yeah, check it out on Netflix and let us, drop us a note. Let us know what you think about it in the comment section.